From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. When it comes to vacation, an awful lot of Americans just don't take it these days, or take less than their parents did a generation ago. Study after study touts the benefits of time off, happiness, good health, higher productivity. But the American vacation dream, if you get one at all, is becoming more elusive. Chalk it up to the recession, the rise of the service economy, job insecurity, our always-on culture. Yes, we take less than Europeans, but also less than Mom and Dad did. This hour on Point, America, the no-vacation nation, and what to do about it. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Are you leaving vacation days on the table? Why do you even get paid vacation days in 2015? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Later this hour, American tourists are flocking to Cuba as U.S. relations with Havana improve. We will get that story. But first, Jack Dickey joins me from New York City, staff writer for Time magazine. He wrote this week's cover story for Time, Save Our Vacation. Jack, welcome to On Point.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
You're citing surveys in here saying that we take less than people did a generation ago. What's it look like for those who have vacation, Jack?
For those who have vacation, they're taking less of it, and it's not as good as it used to be. So employers haven't really gotten less generous. I mean, if you go back and look at the 50s and 60s when employers really started giving paid vacation to all employees, not just the executive class, we are doing better in terms of time actually available to us. But we're not taking all the time that we have. And when we do take that time, we're on our cell phones, we're talking to people at the office, we're answering email. So there's a real problem.
I'm looking here at a story from Quartz saying that nearly half of Americans didn't take a single day off in the summer of 2014. Is the primary pressure here at work? They don't feel like they can do it, or they just don't get paid vacation time at all? The U.S. is one of the few industrialized nations where the zero is guaranteed.
Right. Well, this is something that strikes anyone. I mean, no matter how you think of the American economy and what freedom corporations should have with their employees, pretty much anyone is surprised when you hear the list of nations that do offer some statutory protection for paid time off, and you hear that America's not on it. I mean, Syria, Yemen, China, these nations, you know, they would not be anyone's idea of workers' paradises, and yet they protect the right to some paid time off. The U.S. on a statutory level doesn't. No state even protects paid time off, so it's at the employer's discretion to give it out. And what that translates to is not so much that employers don't give out vacation, although I mean something like 20 to 25% depending on which survey you look at of Americans don't have access to any paid time off. But it also kind of undermines vacation's place in the culture. So people don't think of it as vital as you would see in say Europe.
So we've got here, I'm looking at the guarantees in Europe, 28 days in Switzerland. You know, that's almost 6 weeks. Norway, 29 days. Luxembourg, 35 guaranteed paid days off. In the U.S., no guaranteed paid days off. And what people actually take, you're reporting a survey here that says in 2013, excluding holidays, American workers with access to vacation, and as you point out, many do not have that access, but those who do took 16 days, just a fraction of what we're seeing as a guaranteed minimum many European countries. How does that 16 days compare with what Americans took a few decades ago?
Well, it's low. The number, if you look at an average of 1976 to 2000, the average for Americans taking vacation days excluding holidays was about 20 days. And so since 2000, as one study put it, we've given back a week of vacation to our employers with no wage growth to show for it, nothing really to show for it. Because, you know, if you're counting on a five-day work week, 4 days is basically a week of vacation.
So describe the dynamics that have led Americans to voluntarily, you said we did this deed to ourselves, to voluntarily, if they have it, give it up, not use it, leave it on the table.
Well, I think some of it has to do with the modern workplace, and that cuts across sort of all income levels, in that if you're a high earner, someone in the professional class, you are conditioned to think you're needed constantly at the office. It may be insecurity. It may be you're actually needed because you haven't trained your employees well enough to know what to do if you're not there. But you're constantly telling yourself, I shouldn't take vacation because it will create problems for me when I come back, or it will weaken the firm in the short term. And then for workers at the lower end of the pay scale, what you're seeing, especially after a series of recessions, is a lack of confidence that if you take the paid time off, even if your employers want you to take the paid time off, that your job might not be there for you when you come back, or that someone will have taken your job, or that your employer might think less of you, think of you as not terribly committed. And this is to say nothing of the employees who work multiple jobs and sometimes in these kind of solo proprietorships that have become fairly common in recent years, you know, driving an Uber. Well, if you drive an Uber, you're your own boss. You're your own HR director. And on the one hand, that's great. On the other, if you take vacation, it's really certainly not going to be paid.
It's straight out of your pocket. We were just talking about that yesterday, the on-demand economy and what it means for people who work in it and more people in it and headed into it. Jack Dickey wrote the cover story for Time Magazine, Who Killed Summer Vacation? Jack, lots of response to you online here. Nancy writes to us, it's appalling how Americans have such a crummy deal in terms of paid time off. Our jobs are difficult enough and we need the rest and relaxation to stay in the trenches. Patrick says, haven't been on a vacation in years. It just costs too much money. Ashley, haven't had a vacation in years, not even traveled outside my state for an overnight trip. Not only can I not afford it, but my job frowns upon any extended period of time being taken. They make it dang near impossible, she writes, to even get off work for anything, even when my mother was hospitalized. So a family vacation, wow, I think that's a dream of decades past nowadays. We hate to think it, but for no small number of people, it appears to be true. Jameson's calling from Omaha, Nebraska. Jameson, you're on the air with Jack Dickey. Thanks for calling.
Oh, hey, thanks for having me on.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was just calling to say my work, it just doesn't pay enough. I think this is the first time in our nation's history where we've seen an era of great wealth, great quality of life being raised, but we don't see real translation into wages being raised for middle-class people or people who are in poverty. I feel the wages aren't going up. I know in my work right now, they just don't get paid enough. And we used to get 20 days off, unpaid vacation, and they cut that down to 8 this year. So there's just not enough time to take a vacation, and they don't pay us enough to be able to go on any trip or really enjoy ourselves because we can't afford it.
If you dream of one, Jameson, what do you dream of? What would you like to do this summer?
I'd love to go to Japan. I'd love to go to Switzerland. I'd love to see the world. I mean, I'm young. I want to go places while I still can, but I can't afford to.
8:50 an hour, not easy to do, and we all relate to that. Jameson, I appreciate your call, and I hope for better. Derek in Virginia Beach, Virginia. Derek, you're on.
Hi, Tom.
Hey, what do you know?
So I am 26, and I had 3 weeks of paid vacation last year and 12 paid holidays.
Sounds pretty good.
And, yeah, I worked 8 of those holidays and didn't take the vacation time.
Why?
Well, I think part of it is this culture of trying to prove your worth and move up and show that you're a really valuable asset to the organization to help your career mobility and reputation. And so just kind of this desire, if I'm gone and something goes wrong that I could have prevented, this desire to really showcase your skills so that you could continue moving up in your career.
Is it working, Derek, or are you burning out?
I had bosses who were like, you need to take time off, you need to take time off, and they were certainly right. I did burn out. So it's for the people who get that paid time off, it's valuable. And I should have taken a lot of it.
Derek, give yourself a break here. The work will be there when you get back. I appreciate your call, Jack Dickey. There you have it, Exhibit A, all that paid vacation in Derek's case, and got to move up, can't do it.
Yeah, there are a lot of stories like Derek's out there, and I'm in the same boat. I'm sure other people are too, where it's just it doesn't occur to you that you need time off, and then suddenly you're kind of run down and bleary-eyed and can't think straight and say, wow, what happened?
Maybe a vacation is in order. Jack Dickey is with us from Time Magazine. We're talking this hour about America, sadly, the no-vacation nation for a lot of people. Alphabeat with Vacation behind us here. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Ah, the sound of the beach there. Unfortunately, we're talking this hour about America, the no-vacation nation, why it's happened, what it costs us, what to do about it. Jack Dickey is with us from Time Magazine, wrote the cover story, Who Killed Summer Vacation? You can join us as well. Of course, credit cards want you to go out there and take a vacation. Here's a MasterCard commercial from last year. Kids tell their parents, take more vacation.
We've heard that over 400 million vacation days go unused every year.
That's the stupidest thing I ever heard. They're paid vacation days.
If you guys agree to travel more, we'll all do better in school.
We'll have a better understanding of other cultures.
I will learn to parler français.
Oui, oui.
We're not asking for much. We just want one more day.
One more day? People taking no days. Here, NBC talking with a woman on the street last summer. No days.
I definitely do not take all of my vacations. One of the reasons is just feeling a need to be at work.
Jack Dickey joins us from New York. He's writing about it for Time Magazine. We're going to go in just a moment to the great Eleanor Beardsley, NPR's Paris correspondent. Let me bring in Thomas Gagin first from Chicago, labor lawyer based in Chicago, author of Were You Born on the Wrong Continent? How the European Model Can Help You Get a Life. Thomas Gagin, thank you for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for inviting me.
So what's going on with Americans and vacations? Are we inflicting this on ourselves?
Well, you know, I'm over 65, I'm 66, and I remember in the 1950s, even as a kid, people used to make jokes about the Japanese, how they never took vacations. We did take vacations once. In the 1950s, we had 38% of the workforce that was unionized. These unions all required vacations. People took time off. And because the union people were taking time off, the non-union managers were taking time off. We don't have unions anymore. And we live in a country where you can be fired, unlike Europe and Japan and Korea, where you can be fired for any reason at any time or for no reason whatsoever. So in the United States, everybody is just dispensable. Everybody is dispensable. The corporations are set up that way, that you can be replaced, you can be fired. There are no unions. Everybody is trying to prove that they are not dispensable. You know, there's enormous peer pressure to stay at work so that you aren't the one who is fired. And this, you know, people give different reasons why they're working, but it's, I think it all comes down to this structural fact that in this country, unlike countries where people take 4 weeks off, you can be fired for any reason at any time. You can't even take sick pay here, sick time here. You can be fired for having the flu.
So, Tom, is there a payoff for American workers in better pay or more economic growth? Is there an upside to this?
Well, I can't think of an upside. You know, that if it leads to people being addicted to work, which is, you know, I once found a passage in the young Karl Marx who made the argument that alienation from work actually takes the form of addiction to it. You can't leave your job. You become obsessed with it. You're kind of a victim of your own compulsiveness. And I think what you see here is one of the aspects of this fear that people have, this economic insecurity, it gets translated into an addiction to work. And the more you're at work, the less life you have. And the less life you have, the more you want to be at work because you can't deal with what is really meaningful in your life. And I'm a Catholic, and I last Ash Wednesday, the priest stood up and said, if you really want to fast, and this was a kind of yuppie congregation, he said, if people in this congregation, this parish, really wanted to fast, they should give up work for one day. You know, well, that's unthinkable. people are in this country are frightened of losing their job. They're economically insecure. And going to work over and over has created a kind of lifestyle where it's easier to be at work than to be on vacation in a strange sort of way.
Tom Gagin, stand by in Chicago. I want to flip this coin to the other side and get a little report, if we can, from vacation land. Eleanor Beardsley, NPR's Paris correspondent, joins us from Paris. Eleanor Beardsley, thank you so much for being with us today.
Well, it's my pleasure.
Before we talk about vacation, may I just compliment you on your work first? I've enjoyed it so much, and particularly your reporting trip to Ukraine some months ago now. I thought it was just fantastic. Thank you very much for that, Eleanor.
Oh, that's so kind of you. Thank you very much.
So here are Americans grumbling about not having or not even taking vacation. And I'm reading you in France, where vacation is all over the place, grumbling about too much vacation. What's that about, Eleanor?
Yeah, that's actually, I'd like to be giving this talk to the French, not Americans, because listening to all this makes me kind of sad. And I think Jack Dickey said it, it's not in our culture to take vacation. And what a difference a country makes. You just change countries, and Europe is a whole nother mindset. And, you know, people might laugh at the French, but you all know the Germans work hard, right? Or that's our,
yes,
that's our perception anyway. Mm-hmm. Well, they're taking 5 to 6 weeks a year. The British are doing it too. People here actually work hard, but they take time off, and you're expected to. When I first came here, I was very, I love that, because you absolutely can take 3 weeks off in the summer and you're expected to, and it's normal, and you would never not take a vacation in the summer here. It just would never happen. People use their vacation and they're encouraged to take it, and you have no guilt. And everyone is dispensable. No one is needed constantly, but for all the reasons that you cited, we've convinced ourselves of that. But after a couple of years, and it's kind of linked to having kids here, you realize that there is such a thing as too much vacation. And I have two older stepsons and a young son of my own, and there's always kids home because they're always on vacation. And I just and it's so funny because here people don't see that because it's just what you get used to. So and you do. Okay, so every 6 weeks, they have 2 weeks off here, and they have 2 months off in the summer. So, of course, you know, the country is sort of run by schools because that runs parents and families. And so you have your two-month summer, and everybody's like, oof, the kids are back in school September 1st. But come October 18th, you got a two-week break coming up. And I get upset because the other European countries have 1 week, and France always has two. With 1 week, you can deal with it, even if you don't have plans. But with two, you've got to make plans. And so I wrote this article saying, if you don't have the grandparents nearby, the country house, a big budget to go traveling, and about 10 weeks a year vacation, you know, it's just very difficult. Although I have to admit, they have, like, daycare centers in the schools, and there's a lot of things. But, I find that things are often closed here, and people are
always on vacation, and then you can't get anything done.
Eleanor, I'm having culture shock just listening to the other side of this coin. You struggling with too much vacation, but I can also hear you listening in on the American conversation and thinking, what is up with that? I mean,
it's making me sad.
Yeah. Jack Dickey, Eleanor says, is not in our culture. Well, yes and no. I mean, you remind us that Americans did generate a culture of vacation. Give us a little of the history, Jack.
Yeah, so when the nation was founded, obviously you had these strong Puritan impulses and idle hands are the devil's workshop and all that. After the Civil War, by the late 19th century, people were realizing there's actually some benefit to taking time off, primarily a health benefit that would mitigate the aversion to idleness that had permeated the American ethic for so long. You had these dirty cities and people were saying, no, get out, go to the country, go to the mountains, go to the hot springs, to the point where by 1910, President William Howard Taft was asked how long should a man's vacation be? And he said, 2 to 3 months. You need 2 to 3 months in the summer to survive what you just went through and then what's ahead of you in the coming months.
And that was 1910. Here we are in 2015 and barely taking 2 or 3 days, some people.
Yeah. Now, Taft may have liked vacation more than most, but even so.
Big appetite.
But you would think that we wouldn't get from that point where you had the president of the United States saying 2 to 3 months to now when it's considered kind of shocking when President Obama says 7 days of sick leave in the State of the Union.
Yeah. You quote the New York Times editorial from 1855 telling the city's businessmen to take time off, saying they were overworked for no good reason. And quoting here from the New York Times, 1855, the very bad results are palpable to everyone. Continually, we hear of some model businessman who never leaves his counting house but for his meals, suddenly and mysteriously attacked with bleeding at the lungs or a complaint of the heart or a trouble in the head. 1855, the paper saying, Americans, take your vacation. Ayla in Waltham, Massachusetts. Ayla, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. One thought that I had while listening to this is that a component to all of this is that people, it's more socially acceptable to feel like you can't take a vacation, to be really too busy to do that. I find similarly for myself, I'm taking a 2-week vacation this summer, and I feel that when I tell people that, I feel this need to justify it by saying, well, I've never taken that long in my life, and this is a special occasion.
Don't say it.
Eleanor Beardsley, can you imagine Europeans being baffled at the idea of a week or two off?
Absolutely. You take a week or two off in October.
Never mind August.
December and February, I mean, August. I think Americans need to stand up. I mean, we are cogs in a machine. I mean, I feel sad and angry sometimes over here because I see what the Europeans are doing and how they're living, and they're living very well. And we're all in the developed world. And so why aren't we taking advantage of that? Why, you know, sometimes I go skiing in February because we have a 2-week break in February and everybody goes skiing. I shouldn't say everybody, it costs some money, but, and there's all of Europe up there, the Dutch, the British, the Germans, the French, the Italians, and they're having fun and they're out skiing. And I'm thinking, you know, nobody's doing this at home.
The explanation for a long time.
This is Tom Geiger.
Yes,
they have unions over there, you know, and we don't.
Well,
that's the big difference.
Eleanor?
Well, but the unions here, it's funny. Countries are so different. The unions don't have to fight for vacation. That's just seen as a right. I mean, there is not, even a very conservative person, let's say like very conservative, would never. I mean, vacation, it's not even on the table. No one's ever questioned it. You need your time off, and you take your time off.
Let's go to Stephanie in Troy.
That's because of the unions, and the upper classes essentially take the time off that the lower classes.
Well, yeah.
It's because the lower class is unionized and took that vacation that the upper classes kind of glom onto it.
It's interesting. It's so deeply embedded now, though, Tom, that Eleanor can't even imagine the most conservative member of those societies.
No, absolutely.
Turning away.
And everyone has a vacation here. Workers, people who don't have a lot of money, you still have the right to a vacation. You might not go to Japan or somewhere, but you will. You will go. There's places that have cheaper vacations where people go camping, but you absolutely. I mean, Europeans camp. You know what? They go to campgrounds and they stay for 3 weeks.
Yeah. Let me go to Niagara Falls, a one-time vacation land here. Rick is calling. Rick, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi. What do you know, Rick?
I'm actually on board with your guest Tom there on union. I'm a union worker myself, but I find that a lot of union jobs are falling to the wayside now. I don't think that there's enough of them around. That's the only way to get a vacation, it seems.
And what kind of guarantee do you have, Rick, in your contract?
Well, we have a seniority rule where, you know, every 6 years we get another week vacation or something like that. So,
are you public sector, private sector? What do you do, Rick?
I'm a mailman. I'm sorry. Yes, yeah, I deliver mail, and we have union and. I do get vacation, but I don't make enough money to actually go on vacation, just like the guest was saying there as well. So,
at least you can go fishing, I hope, or something nearby.
Yeah, I could do that. Yes, I can go golfing or
That's no small thing. But you're with Tom. You say bring the union if you want the vacation. I appreciate your call. One more, Stephanie in Troy, Ohio. Stephanie, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
How are you?
Good. What's your story?
I'm a Head Start preschool teacher.
Great.
And so we're given the summer off because we don't have children in the summer, mm-hmm. but we're not paid. We're expected to file unemployment for that time. So making ends meet, it's just such a struggle. So I'm home with my children, but, today I'm going to take them to the park. But I can't do much of anything with them because we struggle financially on that. And that's Head Start nationwide.
So you're not going off to the Great Smoky Mountains or to Disney World or the lake house. It's unemployment for the summer.
It is. It's hard. But, you know, it's a trade-off to spend time with your kids. And also, I do love so much what I do. But
yeah, we don't doubt it. And we're glad with the time for the kids. And still, Eleanor, what do Europeans say about the American way? Do they even know that what we're doing over here?
They know. And they laugh. They feel so sorry for us. And I even have to tell them, well, actually, we have more than 2 weeks. Because a lot of Americans do have more than 2 weeks. But they know they feel really sorry for us. And nobody, and you know, they all want to, honestly, if people, that's one of the reasons why people say, oh, I wouldn't live there, because it's like a rat race. I mean, it can be a rat race here, too, of course. People work hard here, but you are guaranteed your time off and it's respected. So, yeah, they are very aware of that.
Tom Geoghegan, Eleanor Beardsley listens to the stories today and says it makes her feel sad but angry. Why do you think Americans put up with this, Tom?
Well, they don't have the right to unionize. You know, if we had a right to join unions without being fired, if we had the kind of presumptive right that the Europeans have, if we didn't have a regime where you could be fired for any reason at any time and not for just cause, A, we'd have unions like we did in the 1950s. We'd have more vacation time. It's a structural problem. It's cultural now, but the culture is the way it is because the laws are the way they are.
Tom Geoghegan, please stand by in Chicago. Eleanor Beardsley in Paris. Jack Dickey with Time Magazine with us today from from New York. We've got more callers here. We're thinking about vacation. Summer's right in front of us. Who doesn't want to enjoy it? A Little Sly and the Family Stone. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Hi, everybody. Tom here. I'm glad you're joining us for this On Point podcast. Before we get back to the show, I'd like to tell you about another podcast you might enjoy, too, Dear Sugar Radio. Join hosts Cheryl Strayed and Steve Almond as they field questions about love, sex, work, guilt, money, you name it. That's Dear Sugar Radio. You can find it at wbur.org/Dear Sugar or subscribe on iTunes. Yeah. Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about America, the no vacation nation, sadly, why it's happened, what it costs us, what to do about it. Jack Dickey is with us from Time Magazine. His big cover story, Who Killed Summer Vacation, reminds us that we now, those who get vacation, and no one's guaranteed it, and many get none, but those who do take about 16 days now, that is about a week less than people took from the 70s up till almost 2000. Americans almost voluntarily, where they have it, giving up their vacation, addicted to work, Thomas Gagin says. He joins us, labor lawyer based in Chicago, joins us there today. Eleanor Beardsley of NPR is with us from Paris. She sees all kinds of vacation in Europe, maybe too much, but looks back at the U.S. and wonders why Americans take it lying down. Before this hour's out, we're going to look at Cuba. Somehow, a lot of Americans are flooding there since relations have warmed up, and we'll check in on that. Lots of response to us online here on Facebook. Kathleen says, I have lost the concept. I have not had a vacation in over a decade. Garrett says, life experience, travel, interaction, cultural encounters will always be more intrinsically valuable than material wealth. Always, yet you've got to have time to go out for that. Cisco says time off is all combined these days. Vacation, holiday, sickness. Cisco says saving my time in case of dire need or funeral. That puts it all in a big perspective. Jacqueline's calling from Chesapeake, Virginia. Jacqueline, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hello. What's your story?
Hi. Yes, I'm actually originally from the UK. And I've been listening to the program, and when I first came here, I was absolutely appalled that you had to work for an entire year before you even earned 1 week's vacation. And it was just, I couldn't believe it. And I was a single mother, so any vacation time I had was generally used for personal business that I had to take care of or events with the children. So there was never really a quote-unquote vacation. So, and I have to disagree with the person that said that the people in the UK are bound by their labor laws through a union to take vacation. That's not entirely true. I just came back from there, and both of my sisters are full-time workers. One's a nurse and one's a teacher, and they are not in a union. And they have to take their vacation. But I think it's beneficial.
Yeah, I imagine they do too. Tom Gagin, I suppose you'll say that the union sort of set the expectation here. You hear Jacqueline pushing back a little bit there. But
yeah, they create a culture. And if you are an upper middle class professional, not in a union, and you see ordinary blue collar people taking 6 weeks off, what are you going to do? You're going to take the same amount of time. So that it establishes a convention. It creates a kind of peer pressure, but you need collective action
to put
that peer pressure into place.
Let's go to David in Atlanta, Georgia. David, you're on the air. What do you know?
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Thanks for letting me talk. I just got my master's degree focused in archaeology.
Okay.
And all the way through school and everything, since I was a teenager, I worked various jobs in service industries, which, of course, have no time for vacation or anything like that. But even in archaeology, even though it's a professional field, 95% of it is corporate archaeology these days. So they're very temporary contracts that you might work 2 weeks, you might work 6 months. But in some of those, you even have insurance, but you don't really have time to use your insurance, much less vacation, because you're traveling around, you're working all week or whatever, and you're staying in hotels. And then, you know, if you do have time off, it's because you don't have a job anymore, because you're, you know, waiting on the next job. So even in some professional fields like archaeology, you know, I went to school for 6 years, I still have no sense of a hope for vacation.
We get that contract work aspect of it. David, I just have to ask you quickly, what is corporate archaeology? What does that mean?
Okay, so the federal government actually requires archaeology to be done before something that uses public funds is built. It could be as simple as a sidewalk or as big as something like a hospital.
I see. So go down and look and see if there's anything valuable down there. And when you're done, you're looking for your next job. You're not on vacation. Jack Dickey, what about those, we've heard about them lately, who are in the kind of company that says, take as much time as you want? One listener has a friend who is one of these companies now. It's as much as you need, sort of unlimited. You just work it out and go. Who's getting that, Jack, and are they taking it?
Yeah, I worked at such a company before I was at Time, and I didn't take any vacation. So I find that that's often the experience of a lot of these workers. Now, it's a very small fraction of companies. It's the Society for Human Resource Management says it's about 1% of companies. But their employers, people want to emulate Netflix, Virgin under Richard Branson, Zynga, which is an online game maker. What often winds up happening is people don't take any vacation because at least if it's in a contract somewhere that this is the number of days you have, well, maybe the same impulse that forces you to work will say, well, I need to make this number smaller. But if there's no number, why would you ever take time off besides just a day here or a day there?
If there's nothing guaranteed, you're right. Unlimited vacation appears as nothing more than a faux autonomy, like a dog constrained by an invisible fence. Eleanor Beardsley, you must really be shaking your head in Paris at all these invisible fences and visible that Americans have around themselves here. What's your advice to the homeland, Eleanor?
Well, it needs like a movement. You're right. If it's just one person, this guilt has got to go. I mean, there's nothing wrong with taking 2 weeks off in the summer. I mean, here, you know, you can't even, your first week is you're just winding down, and then your second week you're enjoying it. So, I mean, you know, if you even want to rent a house in the summer here, you often cannot rent any house for less than 2 weeks. And so it's a complete, I think people need to get together. And yes, it probably does start with the unions. Here, it started with the unions so many years ago that's not even connected to the unions. It's a societal fact. Everyone needs to get that time off and no one questions it. I don't know. It just, people need to wake up. I mean, just look, the other developed world, which is what? The Australians, the Americans, you know, North America, the Europeans, they're living better than we are. Why are we not demanding what we deserve? We work hard. We should have just, you know, 3 or 4 weeks off a year, say, and take it.
Eleanor Beardsley, we've got it. The word from Paris, wake up. The guilt has got to go. NPR's Paris correspondent, we're so grateful to you for joining us, Eleanor. Tom Gagin, labor lawyer in Chicago, thank you very much for being here today, Tom. And Jack Dickey, staff writer for Time magazine, with us from New York City. He wrote the cover story, Who Killed Summer Vacation? Thank you, Jack.
Thanks, Tom.
In a moment, formal travel restrictions still stand, but as U.S.-Cuban relations thaw, American travelers are heading to Cuba in droves. This is On Point. Last week, Cuba came off the U.S. government's official state sponsors of terrorism list. It was the latest move to melt the long diplomatic freeze between the two countries. Remnants of a decades-old travel ban still stand for American tourists, but Americans are pouring in anyway. With us now from New York City is Beth J. Harpaz, Associated Press travel editor. She's just back from a trip to Havana. Beth, thank you very much for being with us.
Hi there, or should I say hola, since we're talking about Cuba.
All right, hola. We'll get all wild and crazy. How did it strike you? Was it your first time in Cuba?
It was my first time in Havana. The Associated Press has a bureau there that covers news, and they've just been so darn busy that they thought, you know, let's send in somebody with fresh eyes to just kind of look around and see what's happening on the ground.
What struck you? Give us your first impressions into Havana.
Well, what struck me was that it's a lot grittier than what I had imagined. I think that we've, in the last year or so, there's been a lot of press about, you know, this sort of frozen in time, vintage, glamorous, the old cars, the clubs, you know, these kind of upscale magazine cover stories.
Yeah, the photos look pretty glam, old but glam.
Yeah. And I have to tell you, that was not my impression. I'm a lifelong New Yorker, and all I can tell you is Lower East Side, 1980 Avenue B. That was really more of what I was experiencing. you know, it's a the government there has neglected a lot of basic infrastructure. There's like rubble in the streets. There are a lot of, you know, kind of shells of buildings where there's a facade and you can see the sky through the non-existent roof. And it's sort of this weird combination of the neglect of the infrastructure combined with the trade embargo, which means there's no consumer goods. I left my toothbrush home. It took me 3 days to find a toothbrush in Havana. There's no 7-Eleven on the corner. There's no Duane Reade with, you know, everything you need at the counter.
What about, I don't know, other things Americans anticipate when they travel? Air conditioning? Wi-Fi?
Well, the air conditioning is... In many places, it's non-existent. I ate in some very nice restaurants, no air conditioning. There was an American orchestra making the first appearance by an American orchestra in many years in Havana in a beautiful grand theater with stunning acoustics, no air conditioning. I mean, people brought their beautiful Spanish fans and were fanning themselves, but I don't know how the musicians could play so wonderfully because they were wearing tuxedos and gowns and it was like 85 degrees inside. So air conditioning is not a given. Some of the top hotels there, I interviewed a millionaire American who was there to buy art. He told me that the air conditioning in his $300 night hotel was broken. And when he complained to the desk, they said, the engineer is gone today. He'll be here tomorrow. I don't think that would happen in a Comfort Inn at an airport in any city in America where they would just say, tough luck. And, you know, it's an offline culture. There is no Wi-Fi. If you want to go on the Internet to check your email, you have to go to a tourist hotel and pay $4 a half an hour. And even then, sometimes the Wi-Fi doesn't work. And that also means as a traveler, I mean, we're so accustomed now to doing everything on our phones when we go someplace. You know, we've got GPS. We've booked everything in advance. We call those reservations up. We're posting on Facebook and Instagram. That's not happening in Havana. I'm old enough to remember what travel was like before the Internet. And you know, it was what it was, and I can certainly cope with it. But you have to kind of readjust your expectations and prepare. You need a paper map, okay? The drivers do not have GPS. I stayed in an Airbnb in a kind of a rundown section. The taxis never knew what my address was. We both were sitting there with a paper map every night figuring out how to get there. I ran into some Americans. They had reserved a car. They paid for it in advance. They didn't take a paper copy of the receipt. The car agency refused to honor their reservation until they went to a tourist hotel, bought Internet time, and persuaded the hotel to print out the reservation. Then they had to go back to the agency with the paper proof because the agency didn't have access to an online database. So you have to really kind of go back to the future if you're planning a trip there.
All right, so prepare, brace yourself a little bit. I mean, Beth, maybe you're a big city, high-tech, uptown gal. People do talk a lot about the charm of Cuba, and Americans, as you have reported, are just headed there in droves, up 36% just since January, the number of visitors, right. And that's people right. Not even with family there.
Right, exactly. Those are Americans who are going to visit. We're not allowed to go for tourism yet. Tourist activities continue to be prohibited for U.S. citizens going to Cuba by order of the Treasury Department. There are 12 categories that you can go in, like a cultural tour. I ran into a family from New York on a religious activities license. They were bringing medicine and diapers to a synagogue there. Many college groups go. But you know what? There are a lot of people who are self-certifying. It's a little bit like the Wild West right now. I ran into some boys who had just graduated from law school. They're celebrating. I said, how'd you get in? Oh, we're paying support for the Cuban people. I was like, really? As they're gouting their, you know, mojitos at the Hotel Nacional. So certainly, it's, you know, there's a little bit of a foggy land out there, as one expert told me. But sure, it is charming. And, it, you know, there's so much great American history. One of the things that I was really struck by were the deep, long ties between American and Cuban culture. The Hemingway sites are lovingly preserved. There are Cubans there, people from all over the world, and Americans. You know, you walk into a hotel, there's a plaque that says Babe Ruth was here. There's a park that honors John Lennon, not that he's an American, but, you know, sort of a New Yorker. A beautiful, beautiful monument to the USS Maine. Remember the Maine, the ship that went down. So there's a lot there. Of course, the music, you know, the people are very warm, but there's also a lot of hustlers. No violent crime, but people will, on the street, try to talk you into buying cigars, changing your money, and you have to be careful who you trust.
Is it party town, Beth, at this point? You mentioned clubs. Is it a club city, Havana? It used to be back in the mafia day. What about now?
I think not as much as we might imagine. I went to the Tropicana, which is rated one of the top shows in all the travel guides. I found it kind of bizarre, like, you know, these dancers with chandeliers on their heads, kind of wiggling their hips. It was mostly British middle-aged tourists shouting, brilliant, brilliant. A friend of mine went on an organized tour. She said there were a couple of young guys on her tour. After 2 days, they flew to the Dominican Republic because they said there wasn't enough partying going on in Havana for them. I'm not much of a partier myself. Certainly, all the bars are busy, and you can have a really fun time having a daiquiri or a mojito, especially in some of the bars that have American connections. Like, you know, there's a couple bars that Hemingway frequented. There's Sloppy Joe's, which was in the great movie Our Man in Havana. And it's just so much fun to go in those places. It really is. The Hotel Nacional has a beautiful back lawn overlooking the sea. I could barely turn myself away. It's not Cancun, and it's not cheap. You know, $500 round trip charter from Miami, $800 round trip from JFK, and the prices are about what you pay in New York. You know, taxi rides are like $10 to $20 no matter where you go. I paid $50 a night for an Airbnb room in Old Havana, 42 actually. Hotel rooms are like $150 to $300. So it's not cheap, and the food prices are moderate but not cheap.
Beth Harpaz with a first-hand account of travel to Cuba. She is travel editor for the Associated Press, just back from Havana. Beth, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you. It was lots of fun talking.
No tourism is the word, but there's been almost no active enforcement, she reports, of that ban under the Obama administration, and many Americans going. We go out with Cuban composer and pianist Daimir Gonzalez, Cuba and travel. I'm Tom Ashbrook. Thanks for joining us today. This is On Point.